chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. Now News Talk 1360 WCHL presents Side Dish, hosted by Deborah Miller. Tune in for 30 minutes of tasty talk with culinary aficionados, wine connoisseurs, and more. Side Dish is locally produced by News Talk 1360 WCHL. Now let's get to the tasty talk with Deborah Miller.
Welcome to Side Dish. I'm Deborah Miller, and I have around the table with me today Scott Maitland. Welcome. It's been, oh my gosh, like a year, 2 years, 4 years, a million?
I think 2 years, actually, but geez, that's been a long 2 years.
Way too long. There's been, you have had so much happen to you in the last 2 years, and we should just start way back then and bring us forward.
Well, on a personal note, we're trying to figure out when we last talked, you know, I have a 26-month-old daughter, and I've got a 6-month-old son, and so...
And if you don't believe him, go check out Facebook. He's got
there you go.
Cute as anything. Oh, what's his name?
Austin.
Austin, that's
Austin,
right.
Scott Maitland and Kaylee Marie Maitland. So,
Daddy.
Yeah. It's so much fun. It really is fantastic. And then, you know, geez Louise, we in February of 2010, we opened up the Great Room at Top of the Hill and also the Back Bar at Top of the Hill. And those two together basically effectively more than doubled the size of Top of the Hill Restaurant and Brewery. So, you know, that has been a huge, huge addition to our operation.
And you didn't have a hurricane in your way this time.
We didn't have a hurricane, no, but we did have the world's, or, you know, the United States' largest recession since the Great Depression.
So, yes, we have.
I think I would have preferred the hurricane.
I don't know, from the story you told us last time you were here. the economy has taken a little tipple on everybody, and hopefully... we can look forward to coming out of that at some point soon.
Well, you know, and I've been talking to enough folks, and I feel confident in our own track record now over these last 6 months that, you know, this year's been pretty good. And that seems to be across the board for everybody, not just us. So I feel like things are doing pretty well. People, you know, maybe it's not the world's greatest economy, but unlike 2 years ago, people don't feel like it's going to fall off the cliff. And I think that that was what we were facing with, you know, restaurateurs and bar owners, especially bar owners in Chapel Hill. We literally, you know, the kids went home for Christmas of 2008, came back 2009, and now the bar owners will talk about it, you know, that everybody's sales immediately dropped 50%.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was mom and dad told the kids, hey, you know what? This is for real.
The credit card bill at Top of the Hill's got to stop.
Exactly.
Well, do you think that's just because it's sort of like the warm water we've adjusted to living with less? I mean, I know I didn't stop going out. I went out less often than I used to, and I maybe didn't order 3 courses.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, if you focus, you know, Top of the Hill is an interesting business in the sense that we have a number of different segments that come and frequent us. And so, you know, from the restaurant side, quite frankly, the restaurant did far better than I would have imagined. But it was literally the late night crowd. And I think that that was a result of mom and dad pulling in the reins on what they allow their kids to spend. And quite frankly, what I feel like, I mean, this is just me making this up, but I think what happened was in, you know, Christmas time of 2008, they sat the kids down and said, hey, listen, our retirement funds have disappeared. And now everybody's retirement fund and all that stuff is back up to normal levels. Right. So now all of a sudden everyone's like, all right, the nest egg is still here. But I think it was the fear of the nest egg disappearing that made people freak out.
Well, that's a great point. I hadn't really thought about it like that. I mean, I didn't look at it like that because, I mean, I saw my nest egg disappear, but then I've always thought I have to work till I'm 75 anyway.
I was going to say, and when you don't have a nest egg at all, it's no big deal,
yeah.
Right?
You know, well, the days of going feeling. Back and living at home, I mean, I can't do that. My parents moved into a retirement community, and they'd have to hide me.
I was going to say, I think if you could work it out, it would be a really good gig.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of families that have done that, and some friends of mine in Memphis just built a huge house, and all the family, it's an extended family all living together because of the economy, and I think that's really wonderful. It's not always a good thing. Everybody's not in a position to do that.
No, sure. But, so, you know, but you signs already, signs of the recovery and stuff, though, it's, I was talking to folks that run the sport camps on campus. And you know, for restaurants in Chapel Hill, this is a huge deal. Well, interestingly, you know, the folks that are running the sports camps go, you know, my God, the bottom fell off. Well, I know that. Why? Because my business fell off because, right. you know, the parents aren't dropping off the kids and staying for a couple of days or at least coming to have lunch and dinner when they drop the kids off. Boy, we can see the difference now. We're in the middle of basketball camp right now. And
you can tell the difference.
Totally.
Well, had you already committed to that expansion?
I had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was wrapped up in the arrival of Walgreens as well. So, if I didn't tell you this story, I mean, I signed a construction contract, and my lawyer friends will cringe on this, but it's all wrapped up in a larger story. We won't get into the details, but I signed a construction contract, and then the next day, my bank withdrew my funding. So, we won't get into all that stuff. But point is that actually it was
still smiling.
Yeah, it was a great time to expand in one way, and it was difficult for a little bit as we got operations going. But, you know, from a construction time, it was cheap and relatively cheap to because you were the only folks that were doing construction. So, you know, I think that in terms of value and now we got through that worst part of the recession and in some ways, I think the great room, I mean, the focus of the great room is, you know, wedding receptions and wedding rehearsals and mm-hmm. bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs and those types of things. We can handle parties up to 450 or as small as 20. I think that a down economic year was not a bad year to launch that because you're going to have a year of trying to market all that stuff anyways, right? So I think what's happened is that, it was a perfect negative storm in many ways. But now all of a sudden the economy is picking up steam. We've been open enough up
that you've
long
got
enough.
Legs.
Yeah, we've got our legs. And basically we've got a platform to take advantage of this resurgent economy and or at least.
Mm-hmm.
At
Are you
least,
on Wi-Fi?
You know. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've been Wi-Fi since I think I started free Wi-Fi up there in 99, 2000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then the concept, it won't be long now before we have to go to break, and I guess we want to spend the second segment talking about
the
really new venture, which is really, really exciting. But how didn't that fear stop you from saying, let's even go further than that and step outside of the footprint of Top of the Hill and go down the street for something?
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
I mean, the distillery mm-hmm. that we're going to get into in a little bit, mm-hmm. That had to be a scary thing to move forward on. I mean, wasn't that about the same time?
It was. And, you know, again, it's and it still is a scary thing, but you know, you got to ask yourself, hey, am I going to let fear dictate what I do, or am I going to use that fear, channel it, and turn it into the manic energy you need to make it succeed? And I will tell you that when I started Top of the Hill and I was, you know, single and all of that, that I thought that, oh, you know, I'm risking things. It was scary. Well, let me tell you what. 2 weeks before my son was born, I woke up one night in the middle of the night and thought, what in the world have I gotten myself into? But, you know, that really focuses you and really makes you get things done.
Well, hold that thought. We're going to have to go to break. I'm talking with Scott Maitland from Top of the Hill. You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 1360.
We now return to Side Dish, News Talk 1360 WCHL's locally produced program dedicated to all things food. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for.
Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Deborah Miller. I have around the table with me Scott Maitland. You're sort of the king of downtown Franklin Street.
And I don't know. I think I'm the clown.
Crown.
I'm the clown prince, I think.
Okay, the Joker. I'm just really excited about your new venture that's on West Franklin. So, see, you're going to straddle both ends of the street. Tell us about the distillery.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. We are creating North Carolina's first full-service, fully capable distillery. A shorthand, I say, you know, we're creating a North Carolina's first vodka distillery, but that gives people the impression that we're only going to make vodka, and that's just simply not true. But if you can make vodka, typically, then you have the equipment to make anything, and we do. We have the ability to make anything, and one of the things I'm most excited about is that we are, you know, one of the premises behind Top O Distillery is that we are using only local and hopefully organic products in all of our agricultural basis for all of our products. And so, and you heard me hesitate when I said organic because that becomes a little bit of an issue. So for the vodka that we are making, we already have purchased, and in fact, I'm negotiating tomorrow the replanting of local organic wheat. So we've already got that in store. But the project that, quite frankly, is really exciting me right now is we are going to be the first commercial distillery to make sorghum rum in, as far as we know, the world. And we're going to be using that, getting into a partnership with the folks down at Piedmont Biofuels who are growing sorghum. And and really, you know, sorghum is something that, used to be extremely important to the South up until about 1910, 1920, when the rise of both corn and granulated sugar kind of came in. But up until that point, sorghum was very important to agrarian communities in the South. And it's kind of neat to kind of keep that tradition alive. And,
it's growing around here.
Well, yeah. So Lyle Estelle and, his folks down there at Piedmont Biofuels are interested in sorghum, and so we're doing a joint venture or working with them to create, use that as the basis for us making rum. And there's going to be a lot of work and experimentation that goes into that, but to be honest, my father was a rum drinker, and I grew up being a rum drinker, so I'm
I thought you were going to say rum runner.
Well, yeah, I'm sure if he'd have the chance. Yeah.
So did you, how do you learn to, make vodka, and how do you learn to make rum? Is it, I mean, there, it's not the equipment, right?
Well, it's both.
It's recipes.
No, it's both.
Okay.
It's both. And so one of the things that I'm very, very confident about that people, I think, are skeptical about is the fact that the product that we're going to make, no matter, like when you talk about vodka, vodka is the best example because, you know, vodka is just flat out an exhibition of, you know, technical prowess, both in terms of your personal skill and knowledge and then also the technical ability of your equipment. And the fact is that people smaller than us cannot afford the equipment that we have acquired. And folks larger than us, because they want to scale, end up using a, process that is different than what we are going to use. And in many ways,
more mass produced.
Right. And so what we've got really is we've got a, you know, the Lamborghini of stills.
Nice.
And it's really, it's fantastic. And it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of art. I mean, I'll just go sit in the distillery right now and look at this. It's just amazing. It's a 25-foot copper column with, you know, viewing windows all the way up. And it's just, it's really an amazing piece of, equipment. But most amazingly, you know, it combined with the pot still that we have allows us to do anything that we want to do from, you know, bourbon to vodka to sorghum rum to gin.
But are you doing that in the same machine or is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be batches.
There's batches, right.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's very, in many ways, you know, people don't, you know, people have become very comfortable with what we do in a brewery now, in microbreweries. Everybody kind of understands that now, which is really kind of amazing because 15 years ago, people had no clue what we were talking about. You know, and people would come into the restaurant and say, hey, I'd like a Coors Light. We'd explain that, oh, no, we only sell the beers that we make. And the person would look at you and, you know, here's the list. And they say, fine, I'd like a Bud Light. It's like, okay, we're going to go over this again, right? And so people instinctively now understand what we're talking about when we say a micro distillery.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is most people don't really understand where booze comes from to begin with, and that really what you need to do is you need to either brew some beer or you need to make some wine, and then from there you are actually distilling out the alcohol from either one of those base products. And you know, if you're using grain, then you're basically making a beer, and if you're using fruit, then you're making a wine, and then you know, distill that out. And so what I really like about this project is, you know, first of all, I'm really excited about the fact that I will now be able to have a martini out and somebody won't give me crap for not drinking beer. So, I mean, I love drinking beer, don't get me wrong, but I love having a martini as well. But what I'm really excited about, too, is that we can achieve this idea of a distillery that's only using local agricultural products for it, to make its products, and we can be world class. There is no compromise here. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas, and no offense, because it's amazing what the North Carolina wine industry is doing, but it's handicapped by a very difficult climate for
right.
And so, you know, to think that Carolina is ultimately one day going to reach a parity with Napa Valley or France, I'm just not that optimistic.
Yeah.
Right. Although they make great products, don't get me wrong. But what's here is there is no compromise. We can really go out and do it. And so, you know, the other thing that we've got in our bag is that I'm also very interested in the idea of perhaps making a sweet potato vodka. You know,
perfect.
Yeah, and one of the misunderstandings about vodka, for example, is people say, oh, you got to make it from potatoes. Well, whether you're talking about beer or wine or alcohol, you know, one of the things that people don't remember is that the reason why we do this and why it is throughout the entire world is because it was a way to make agricultural products stable for use later. That's really what it came down to. How do you take a product that's ultimately going to go bad and turn it into something that's going to be able to save? And so, you know, the Russians and the Poles are famous for their vodka. Potato vodka, well, that's because that's what they had, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we're using wheat because of, I think, a much better flavor profile that comes from that. But we do think the sweet potatoes, which is a huge North Carolina product as well, will form the good basis. And then we'll have the advantage of the way of being gluten-free. So these are some of the things that we're looking at doing and we're very excited about. And you know, being this great combination of world-class equipment but small scale, we can really turn on a dime.
Well, so give us the address where it's coming.
Yeah, we're in the old Chapel Hill News Building, which we're renaming the Chapel Hill Booze Building.
Love
and,
that.
And it's 505 West Franklin Street. And we're going to be open in about 3 months, and we will be open for tours and all of that. So stay tuned, and you'll be able to get that kind of information here in a little bit.
Well, hold that thought. We're going to have to go to break. I'm talking with Scott Maitland. You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 1360.
We now return to Side Dish, News Talk 1360 WCHL's locally produced program dedicated to all things food. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for.
Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Deborah Miller here around the table with Scott Maitland. We are talking about his newest venture, Topo Distillery, that's going to open in a few months up on West Franklin. And during the break, I was asking him, so what's the... Tell me about the facility, the building. I mean, am I going to go press my face up against the window and watch that or watch vodka being made? Or can I go inside and drink and order some food? And what's that?
Right. So... First and foremost, this is never going to be a retail establishment in the sense that, hey, this is not going to be a micro distillery restaurant or something like that.
I can't go buy a bottle of vodka.
Well, now hold on. So this is not going to be a micro distillery restaurant. This is not going to be a place that you're going to come and, hey, I'm going to have a couple drinks and hang out and get a bite to eat and all that kind of stuff. We are going to be a full-on manufacturing wholesale place, and hopefully, you know, the only customer we have is the state of North Carolina, because our focus is just truly on distributing throughout the state of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why I'm so hesitant about what the role of visiting and all of that stuff will be is, quite frankly, you know, there are in the past year three distilleries have opened up in North Carolina, but the laws governing the ability for somebody to come in and visit a distillery and to purchase alcohol or to maybe have a tasting room and all of that, quite frankly, is a big time gray area right now. And this is me just talking, and sure not talking about relaying any kind of official stand from any official. But my sense is that they see the success that the North Carolina wine industry has had when they liberalized the idea of tasting rooms and the ability to sail and some other things. And so I think that this is a little bit complicated because you're talking about a control state and their ABC system in terms of how liquor is actually distributed. But I think that all of those things are going to be worked out. So ultimately, what I see being able to happen at the distillery is, you know, you'd be able to come and visit and there'd be a little tasting room, and you might be able to even purchase a bottle or two of product and then leave. But right now, it will be open. You know, we would be able to give a little bit of a tour, that type of thing. But right now, you would not be able to buy anything. We're working on that. And we've got an infant. I mean, there's rumblings that we're going to create a little North Carolina distillery organization, like we've got the North Carolina Brewers Guild.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to try to sluss out some of these things. Oh, there's a number. So there's a distillery called Cat Daddy that's just north of Winston-Salem, but they make moonshine. And actually, one of the things that I'm very proud of is that you can be called a distillery even if you purchase your alcohol from somewhere else and then just kind of relabel it. Okay, so, you know, my whole take, I saw this in the craft beer industry as well. If you walk into your distillery and there's not sacks of grain or a bunch of fruit around, then you need to go somewhere else because they're not a real distillery.
They're not making it.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm very proud of the fact that we are making this from scratch. And there are a couple of other folks that have just opened up, and for some reason I'm spazzing on their names right now, but they are not fully capable like we are.
Well, gosh, I can't believe our time's up. I could just talk all day. I mean, you're such a great guest, and I want you to come back after you've been open a little bit and tell us how it's going.
I'll bring you a bottle. How does that sound?
Ooh, love
then,
that.
Then we'll really make an interesting conversation.
Well, I've had wine. I've had tequila in here, so it wouldn't be the first time. Before we go, real quick, give us...
You can get information about everything we do at Top of the Hill, from the great room to the restaurant to the back bar and the distillery at www.thetopofthehill.com.
And that is on Franklin Street. He's going to be the king of both ends. Thank you, Scott. You have been listening to Side Dish on WCHL 1360.
Thanks for listening to Side Dish. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. Side Dish is an exclusive broadcast of News Talk 1360, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carrboro's News Talk and Tar Heel Station.